Chapter 31. It's a good thing I brought that giant duffel bag to L.A. I don't know how else I'd get her the fuck out of here. But first, I have to get dressed and find my keys and run all the way up to Tuxedo Terrace and get my car. I throw on sweatpants and a shitty old t-shirt I wore when I worked at the bookstore. It's cold, my lungs hurt, and when I get to my car, it's all fogged in and I don't have time for this. This is L.A., there shouldn't ever be any bullshit with the weather. My teeth chatter as I defrost the windshield, and Henderson is a bad luck charm, even dead. When I reach Hollywood Lawns, I put on my hazards and put the car in park. I jog up the steps, back inside, and get my giant empty duffel bag out of the closet and unzip it, and the zipper is loud, stuck. No. I yank. No. I know for a fact that I don't have any trash bags big enough to hold her, and I pull again and I cut my finger, but the zipper behaves. I lift Delilah out of the tub and set her inside the bag. She looks like she's being swallowed by a giant black flower. And I pull the zipper over her feet, covering her legs, past her journey tattoo. I zip more, obscuring her cheap panties and her cheaper bra and her too short neck and her too big mouth and her closed eyes and her rounded forehead and her hair. She never needed extensions. I try to lift the bag, but I'm gonna have to drag it, and fast. This is a crowded neighborhood, and everyone wants to be skinny. Soon, there will be exercisers. I carry the bag out to my Prius, and Wolf is fucking right. You can't go home again. Not if you live in an apartment building. I haven't been in the Donzi alone. A few weeks ago, we were at this bar in the marina, and I ran down to the dock to get Love's sweater, and I remember standing on the boat thinking about how different it is being alone than it is being with other people. I wanted to take the boat out and push it. I wanted to drive it to Japan. I had this moment. The cover band inside was doing Toto, that Africa song, and I was so fucking happy. It was enough to choose Love inside on the dance floor over the great sea, the unknown. And then there's also the fact that I don't have a fucking license. Love's family can get out of anything, I know this. But Love has warned me not to take the boat out on my own. It's infinitely easier to deal with boat cops if 40 or I are there, she said. And if we're not, you know, it's harder. I am on my way back to shore after burying Delilah at sea. Watching the weighted-down bag make its way to the center of the Pacific, far from the world she couldn't quite fit into. I will always think of her kindly, her unfulfilled potential, how she extended her arm for that blender that was just out of reach. She embodied the danger of aspirations, and I will always wish she hadn't turned into a menacing fame monster. I feel bad for her parents. I feel terrible for all the guys who genuinely offered their hearts. Mostly, I feel terrible for her. I picture Harvey showing someone Delilah's apartment full of her things, and I sit. This one hurt. It did. L.A. consumes people. Able-bodied, intelligent people like Henderson and Delilah move here and turn into oversexed monsters, and it didn't have to be this way. They both could have been a little kinder. I don't feel so bad anymore. My body count in L.A., one star and one star fucker. I slide into the marina at the 30-degree angle. I don't turn too early or too late. I learned so much this summer. I am a boater. A rider. The Donzi is in the slip. And then I hear someone calling my name. Love. She is wrapped up in her hooded bathrobe. I'm in last night's clothes, and it's a good thing I'm already parked because now my adrenaline is going and my body is shaking. She's not smiling, and I have no idea how long she's been here, if she saw me go out to sea with my bag and return with nothing.
What the fuck are you doing? She demands. You bail on me and you go out on my fucking boat?
The hairs on the back of my neck stand up. I just went for a ride, I say.
Alone?
She asks. And fuck. My eyes scan the floor for blood, but I'm good. No mug of piss here. Nothing to see, folks. Obviously, I answer. Do you see anyone else here? I can tell by her demeanor that the answer is no. She does not see anyone now. She did not see anyone when there was someone to see. She doesn't know what I did, that I cheated, that I let Delilah into my bed, onto my body, that I put her out to sea. More secrets, more bad things, but I am safe. I'm kind of surprised to see you, I say, and turn the tables.
What the fuck is that supposed to mean? She says.
I don't know, I say. I wrote to you, I didn't hear back.
Yeah, she says. I didn't write back to you because I don't write back to people who treat me like shit. I'm not a doormat, Joe.
Me neither, I snap. Did you have fun with your little friend Milo?
You mean my director? She asks. Because that's what he is, Joe. My director. He's not my boyfriend, and he's not the enemy, and we're in business together. Business that matters to me, goddammit. Business you walked out on. Business that is mine.
She trembles, and I know. She didn't fuck him, and she didn't dump me, and fuck, I overreacted. I fucked up. The Donzi shimmy isn't what I wouldn't give to be on land. Instead, I'm on this boat. This vessel that belongs to her family. She gets to be the steady one on the dock, entitled Land Ho and Fuck Me. Love folds her arms.
Just throw me the fucking line,
she says, my teacher, my boss. I toss it to her and she ties a knot fast, so smooth, such a rich girl. I climb off the boat, clumsy as all fuck. She stomps along the dock and onto the beach, and I follow her onto the sand. Me, the follower. Love, I say. Let me just say I'm sorry. I know I have no excuse.
Joe, when something good happens to me and you shit on it, I'm sorry, I proclaim.
I reach for her. She backs away. I say it again. I'm sorry, love.
It's not enough, she says. You were such a dick, Joe. The second we got the green light, you turned into one of those dickhead guys who doesn't like it when his girlfriend gets attention.
She continues to blast me. She says I let her down. I should have been a man, and I should have congratulated her, and I should have meant it. I should have expressed interest in the script, and I should have been upfront about my obvious jealousy issues. I should have called her instead of texting her because that was a bitch move, and I should have hung around the neighborhood and waited for her after the show. All the things I should have done, and we can't go back in time.
I know, she says, but do you get it? Do you get that it's not going to be like this?
Yes, I say. And I've never loved her as much as I do right now, and I want the chance to be the good guy, the best guy, the talking guy. I want to clean my dick and scrub my skin and start over. I love her too much to let this be the end. Love, I say, I am so sorry. You have to understand, you are right. I acted like a fucking douche. She looks at me. I beg her with my eyes and my hands, and I am as strong as she is. I apologize again and again, and something transforms inside of her. And my hands and my eyes did the work that I was unable to do with my dirty mouth. Love nods.
Okay, she says. We're okay.
And somehow we are hugging. And we kiss. Just one kiss. A makeup kiss. A no sex yet kiss. And then we flop into lounge chairs. The fight is over and she tells me about Seth Rogen's weed and her costume fitting and that she has news. More news? I ask.
40 and Monica broke up, she says. This was almost a record for him, though. I mean, girls are like shoes for him, you know?
I'm sorry, I say. She shrugs.
I know this will sound dumb, but I really thought it was going to stick because of the stupid friends thing.
It's not stupid, I say. It's sweet. You want the best for him. She nods and checks her watch.
We should go get packed. The jet leaves at noon.
I look at her. We have to pack? She rolls her eyes.
Joe, come on, what do you mean? You think you're not going?
You didn't invite me.
Didn't invite you? She balks. We've been seeing each other the whole summer and we practically live together. I don't have to invite you. You should know you're invited. Well, Monica said that Forty invited her.
She rolls her eyes.
So? We have our own way of talking and our own thing. Why don't you get that, Joe?
I don't know. And Love says it's going to be intense in Palm Springs. We won't last unless I communicate. So I try.
Okay. I guess I also wasn't sure because of Milo.
She sighs, and now she explains her dynamic with Milo.
They are best friends, to an extent.
She uses the phrase third twin, and she says it's hard to talk about because it's friendship steeped in guilt.
I'm closer with him than I am with Forty, she whispers. I mean, do you know how wrong that is?
You can't help who you love.
Milo and I both want the best for Forty, so when you see us together or whatever, I mean, no guy I ever dated liked it. I get it. It sucks. But we're just friends.
Love is essentially asking me to tolerate her bond with another man. A good-looking fucker she's known for longer than she's known me. It's impossible. Like snow in Malibu. Absurd.
But what can I do?
She takes my hand.
I wish we could stay here all day, she says.
I want to fuck her in the sand, but she says we have to pack. She stretches and pulls her robe tighter, and I know her well enough to know that she is closing a door on this fight. That the war between us was transitional. Love blows a kiss to the sea.
Goodbye, ocean, she says.
I stay for a moment longer, staring at Delilah's giant blue grave. It would be impossible to find my bag in there, and the permanence of decisions made at sea is bigger than all of us. The wind whips, waves crash, and I head inside. Summer is over.
Chapter 32 Boots and Puppies is already on IMDb. Best friends and former lovers Harmony and Oren are both engaged to other people. They spend 48 hours together trying to learn from the past, live for the present, and decide on their future. But Boots and Puppies isn't a movie. It's a fuck you to me and Love, a 95-page torture chamber of increasingly graphic love scenes between Oren, Milo, and Harmony, Love. Spoiler alert, Harmony and Oren, the only characters in the whole fucking movie, finally decide to get married when Harmony realizes that she needs to let go of the white puppy she rescued, who keeps chewing on all her boots. Fuck you, Milo. Harmony runs to Oren, who knew she would come to her senses. Fuck you, Milo. On the jet to Palm Springs, Love asks what I think of the script. I deflect. I ask her when Milo finished writing it.
This summer, she answers. He hit it out of the park, right?
I contain my rage. I will not let him win. Not when I've just gone to war for my relationship.
Love, I say, pointing to the script. You're not even a little offended by this?
Joe, she says, definitive, as if she'd been preparing for this. If you're going to tell me that you think you're a puppy, then I'm going to tell you that you need a shrink. I am not Harmony any more than you are a puppy. Milo is not Oren. This is a story. A made-up story.
I know I'm not a puppy.
You are not a puppy, she sighs. And anyway, Milo started the script ages ago. He's been rewriting it for a while. You know, Jake Gyllenhaal was going to play Oren up until the very last second. That's how good the script is.
I do not remind Love that he finished it after meeting me, and I do not call bullshit on Jake Gyllenhaal. We land, and I try to focus on the positive. Our fight is behind us, and I've been wanting to go to Palm Springs. The desolate road from the airport snakes through a desert where the houses are giant UFOs from the 60s, spread apart like dice rolled onto a craps table.
We're shooting here and living here, I ask.
Yep, she says. How gorgeous is this house?
Striking, I say. I mean it in a bad way.
The house is mid-century, ice cold, plastic and pink and orange and white, like a ceramic bowl of sherbet left in the middle of the desert during an atomic meltdown, empty as Forty's mind. We park, and she knows I'm disappointed, and she pushes me. "Sorry," I say. "I thought we were going to Palm Springs."
"We are,"
she says, her voice fresh with indignant attitude that only comes from being cast as a lead and studying a screenplay in a jet.
"Milo is amazing getting us this house, right?"
I am sick of hearing that Milo is amazing. He isn't, and this house sucks. We're several miles from the hotels and the stores and the stuff I read about in Less Than Zero, the stuff I wanted to see. My head started pounding the second we walked into this cold house, and we're only 3 hours into the day. I get the chills. It's so hot outside, and it's so cold inside. There is no ocean, no relief, no shabby chic sectional, no sand on the floor of the kitchen, no crunch, no texture, no depth. But we had to shoot here because Milo was desperate to get footage of some something he calls Indoor Coachella. Coachella is a festival fashion show where people dress up like hippies and pretend that Passion Pit is as good as the Rolling Stones. So the idea of taking that mess and shoving it inside a casino is loathsome to me. Barry Stein nixes it right away. He says Coachella is too big of an insurance risk, and Milo pleads with him. "I just need a night there," he says. "I'll go in guerrilla style, Barry. I just want those jagged lights, the feel of it. We need that flashback. And it's not Coachella for real."
"Yeah," Barry says. "It's more of a shit show. No is no."
Milo sulkily moves on. And we shoot all day, every day. Milo karate chops the air at the end of every take, as if he never saw a Ben Stiller movie. As if he doesn't know that chopping the air is an asshole thing to do. I wish Ben Stiller were here. I wish anyone with a brain would come and take over. While we shoot, I have to sit in Video Village, another misnomer. Video Village is not a village. It's just a bunch of folding chairs shoved together in front of the monitors. I have no purpose. When we move locations and relocate the village, I'm not even allowed to move my chair because I'm not union. It's day 4, and Harmony and Oren are fighting because Harmony's puppy ate Oren's boots, and then making up because they hate fighting and love kisses Milo again and again. I hate set. There's too much clapping and bullshit with nicknames. They call the second-to-last shot the Abbey. And the last shot, the martini. And the level of self-importance is unbearable. When my scripts get the green light, I won't spend all my days on set. And when Milo begs to visit, I'll say yes, and then I'll forget to give his name to security.
"Cut!"
Milo yells after they finish kissing for the 30th time. He grabs Love's hands.
"That felt good! Did that feel good?"
"That felt great," she says. She bounces, and I die. It's the little things that make you want to kill someone. The way Milo drinks Diet Dr. Pepper and ties his Jufro in a bun and lifts his shirt to show off his stomach and wipes his glasses down even though they're not dirty. Yes, Milo got glasses and seafoam green topsiders and a navy blue polo-style shirt with a popped collar. And didn't I already kill this guy when he was shilling home soda and fucking Guinevere Beck? Milo calls action again and kisses Love. My muscles tighten. All I can do is eat and wait, eat and watch. And this is day 4 of 28 days, and they're improvising the dialogue, bite me, because he just wants to mount her. I want to be anywhere but here, and I ask Forty about nearby restaurants. He slaps my back. "This is a shoot, old sport. We don't go anywhere until we get this baby in the can." I lower my voice. "Well, what about those other movies?" He whispers, "Bad news is fast. Good news takes a while. Hurry up and wait. It's your job."
You're the boyfriend.
And that's what people call me. Can Love's boyfriend bring her a Diet Coke? Can Love's boyfriend find Love's charger? It's bad, and it gets worse on day 7 when the hairstylist asks if Love's boyfriend can grab the pickles. Milo laughs.
Love's boyfriend is kind of awkward, he says. Let's just call him Lover Boy.
The director gets what the director wants, so now my name is Lover Boy. 40 says I have to lighten up. Love thinks it's cute. Milo shows us a picture of the Restoration Hardware table, home of the big sex scene, on page 27.
The table represents real love, he says. What Oren and Harmony have, the way they forget it around new people, plastic people. But then they get on this table, and man, there's nothing like it.
I love it, Love says. He avoids my eyes and licks his lips as he leafs through his script. Milo is definitely trying to take her away, and I will kill that table. Instead, I go to craft service. Why can't they just call it the food? For the 4th time in 2 hours. I dunk a slice of cornbread into the chili, and I hear someone,
"Is Lover Boy at Crafty again?"
And that's when I decide, I'm gonna get ripped here. Hot. Jacked. I toss my cornbread in the trash and tell Love that I'm going for a run. She reacts.
A run? That's new.
Yep, I say. I gotta start taking better care of myself. It's day 17, and the title of the movie should have been That Time When Milo Tried to Win Back Love. Our sex life dwindles because of the long shooting days, and because we don't have a lock on our bedroom door. Love spends more time with Milo running lines in his room, which does lock. Every time she goes in there, I go for a run. And every time Milo speaks to me, he says things like, "How are you surviving?" And, "You know, if you're bored, we're good, you can go back to L.A. He doesn't say this shit in front of Love, and I want to kill him, but I can't. He's the director, and Love's third twin, and people will notice if he just disappears. So I try not to dwell. Nobody will download this movie except friends and families. And anyway, they may be making a movie, but I'm making a body. I downloaded an app that tracks every morsel that enters my body and every step I take. I do sit-ups and pull-ups and I sprint and I am becoming the hottest man alive while most of the people around me are getting bloated, soft. I arrive in Video Village after my second workout on day 23 and Love notices my arm.
"Hello, biceps," she says. "Wow."
Milo says one of these days he wants to hit the gym with me. I tell him anytime. "You'll get rid of that paunch in no time," I assure him. "Or you can go on a run with me." Love walks away to makeup, and Milo smiles. "Lover boy," he says, "I wanted to thank you. I didn't want to make a big deal in front of Love, but guy to guy, if I were in your shoes with the new scene, the rewrite, I would have gotten it if you said no. So thanks." I don't know about this new scene, and he knows it, and he winks. He ambles away to check on that Restoration Hardware table, and I ask a production assistant for the addition. She avoids eye contact and gives it to me. I read. Interior kitchen. Mid-afternoon. Lazy, lovely time. We are tight on Harmony eating strawberries. Watching Oren. Her nipples pop. She says she's hungry. She licks her fingers. Oren says to eat a berry. Harmony says she doesn't want a berry. 3, 2, 1, boom. Harmony gets onto her knees. We go tight on her mouth as she takes him. Milo knew better than to be around while I read. And all I can think is... Interior, my brain, right now. Fuck you, fucking movie, fucking Milo. There are 2 days until Love blows Milo. But that's not true. Because Love is not blowing Milo.
because I'm gonna do whatever it takes to get that motherfucking mouse out of my motherfucking house.
Chapter 33. I lay the groundwork for my extermination. It is the most painful, derivative thing I've ever said for so many reasons because of my ex. Because I'm not a follower. Because I fucking hate concerts and Urban Outfitters and porta potties. But it has to be said. If I want to kill the mouse, I have to lure him away from the house. We are on set. It's the day before the blowjob. This is it.
So, Milo, I begin, and here it comes, my anti-truth. How cool would it be to get out of here and go to indoor Coachella and see Beck tonight?
Yeah, he says. But we have a big day tomorrow.
But still, I lean in.
If you could intercut some of that pop and the color and the sound with the oral element, I mean.
I'm just saying, that would be dope.
Milo nods.
He says.
Yeah.
I go jogging every night, I remind him. You've been saying you want to go with me.
Milo tugs on his bun.
Not a word to love, he says.
So it's on. A plan is made. I'm relaxed just knowing that he's going to be dead soon. Granted, it sucks that I have to go to indoor Coachella, but at least that festival of fanny packs and MDMA will be good for something. People die at festivals all the time, and Milo's been wanting to go to this fucking festival since day one. I'm the innocent one who just tagged along to make sure he'd be okay. And I'm not heartless. I spend the day trying to save the poor kid's life. I try to kill the blowjob scene. At lunch, Love and I go upstairs to our bedroom and I try to make her see things my way. I hold her hands. I tell her that this is turning into a cult. Milo even looks like Charles Manson with those stupid beads he's wearing now.
Joe, she says, you need to process your own emotions. I can't do that for you.
I'm not processing my emotions, I say. I'm trying to stop you from doing something stupid. She cups my face in her hands.
My job is to make things work, she says. My job is not to tear them down.
We're talking about a blowjob, I remind her. Not world peace. She smiles.
You're jealous because we don't do that. Harmony and Oren are different. I'm not Harmony, Joe, and it's not my vision, it's Milo's vision.
Everyone has been brainwashed by this fucker. Still, I try nonviolent measures of extermination. I continue my anti-blowjob mission after lunch, but everyone wants the blowjob. 40 says it's bold. 40 says people are still talking about Brown Bunny because of the blowjob scene, but 40 is wrong. Nobody is talking about Brown Bunny. Milo says we need it. He says it elevates the material and ensures that the movie won't get lost. Barry Stein shows up on the set. It's amazing the way fellatio changes everything. And that's when I know there is no getting out of it. Barry Stein says the blowjob will get them into festivals. It will make Milo an auteur. The only people on my side are Love's parents on Skype.
I don't understand the movies anymore, Dottie says. Doesn't this make it a porno?
Ray sighs. You don't see anything like this in Fast and Furious. Love pleads.
That's because those movies aren't about anything real, Dad.
In the end, Ray and Dottie send their love to Love, and they're not going to stop her, and they trust her and Milo, and they think she looks beautiful. We have sex. Missionary. It stinks of obligation. Then Love is sleeping, and I text Milo. You ready? He says he needs 20 minutes, so I go downstairs and pour a bowl of Frosted Flakes. I go outside and look at the stars as I eat my cereal. I can't bear the thought of the car ride with Milo, all smug. So I fantasize about what happens when he's dead. Someone will step up to the plate and save the movie, and that someone will be me. In my version of Boots and Puppies, Love will wake up and look for Milo. I refuse to buy into this Harmony and Oren bullshit. She will realize he left her.
Some Peter Gabriel song will play, and she'll walk into the kitchen and grab her phone.
Yeah?
She'll say.
I have this big old table I have to get rid of. Can you guys help me out?
I hear someone open the door and come outside, and I turn around, but it's not Milo. Love, I say. She motions for me to be quiet. She's wearing a transparent nightie I've never seen. She isn't wearing any shoes, any panties. She grabs my hand.
This way.
She leads me onto the set, into the kitchen. Love, what the hell is this? I hiss. She whips her head around.
I'm Harmony, she says. You're Oren, right?
Ah.
Ah.
Yes, I say. Love gestures for me to sit on the table. I do. I'm Oren.
What do you think?
And she planned for me. She left a bowl of strawberries on the table. She holds my eyes. She picks up a berry. She bites.
I'm still hungry.
I warn her. This is a hot set.
I know,
she says. We're not supposed to touch anything.
I know, she says, but I can't help it anymore.
My phone is buzzing, and this isn't supposed to happen. I'm supposed to kill Milo, and he's texting, and he probably woke Love up, accidentally banging shit around. And I don't like this. Love's barely spoken to me all month, and she knows how I feel about the blowjob scene, and she thinks she can just fuck her way out of anything, and no. Love, I say, what is this?
I'm just having fun.
No, I say, what is going on with you and Milo? And don't say nothing. Love puts her hand on mine.
Well,
she says. She bites her lip. Her hands are shaking.
The truth is...
My hands are shaking. She presses.
Milo and I hooked up at Chateau that morning. That day that you and I met.
It is worse than I thought and better than I thought. It is a lesson in instincts. I knew he was my enemy from day one. I knew it. He showed up at Chateau that night and he wanted me gone. And he must have felt blindsided. One minute he's fucking Love. The next, everyone is gushing over the professor. Did you shower after?
Did I shower?
That first day, I say, when we met at Soho House.
Of course, she says.
Did you bring me to Chateau to get rid of him?
No,
she says. Then,
yes.
She looks down.
Is that terrible? But I also really liked you. I mean, that was early.
Love says I'm right about everything. Milo is trying to get her back, and she's been uncomfortable, but she isn't mad at him.
He's one of my best friends, she says. I mean, we always go back to each other, and I beat myself up. Why don't I love him like that? He is not a bad guy, Joe. I have led him on. I feel awful.
Love hugs me and she is naked underneath her nightie. She puts her hands on my shoulders and moves me to the restoration hardware table. She unbuttons my pants. She pulls them down. She kneels like she's supposed to in Boots and Puppies, and I am harder than I've ever been. When she takes me in her mouth for the first time, it's like being inside her vagina, her pink brain, her bloodstream. I think of God again. That section up in heaven where they build bodies to match, and I knew that her vagina was for me, and now I know her mouth was made for me too. As I get close, I open my eyes for just 1 second, and Milo is there at the edge of the set, staring. I wonder how much he overheard. Everything, I hope. I close my eyes again, and I hear a car start. Milo is going to indoor Coachella alone. And maybe I don't have to kill him. Everything is different now. I'm not jealous. I'm logical. The mouse left the house on his own, and we won't have any problems again. I come.
Chapter 34. The next day, we wake up in a new world. We kiss and Love emails Milo to say she won't do the blowjob. She admits that she's relieved. I win.
Milo does too. He's alive, and he says Beck was great and that he respects Love's decision as an actress. Love goes down to set, and when I get out of the shower, I have a new text from 40. Old sport, tell Love you gotta go to town, books or something. Big news. Ask for the deuce suite at the desk. Ritz. Pronto. I drive over there and I've never seen so much cocaine in my life. There are mountains of it on every surface of this ornate suite, and I worry about the police invading, but 40 says to relax. The suite is enormous, and it seems that rich people go to Palm Springs to be in big, empty rooms with shiny lamps. Everything is black and white and electric green. Green pillows abound, like the one R.I.P. Beck used to hump in her shoebox apartment, window open. It's that kind of layout, where you're inside and outside at once. We have our own private patio. What am I doing here? I ask. What's up?
Having a drink,
40 says, and he hands me a flute of champagne, and he's wearing pink and yellow jams and an open hooded bathrobe. Did you want to talk about the scripts? I ask. His agent was supposed to be sending them out, but there hasn't been any news, any action. 40 motions for me to sit by two half-naked hookers.
Go on, he says. Nobody's telling on anybody.
Instead, I sit in a wicker chair with electric green pillows. I'm fine, thanks. 40 laughs. He wants to shoot the shit about Boots and Puppies. He thinks he could get into Sundance, but he doesn't see it getting a theatrical release. He thinks Barry Stein isn't what he used to be, and he thinks Milo should have hired an actor instead of taking the part. Was Jake Gyllenhaal really interested? I ask, because it feels like this is an honest zone, a sacred space, the opposite of a set where the movie is God.
Fuck no, he says. That's just Milo stroking his dick and calling it a hand job. Jake isn't into that kind of shit. I don't even think he read it.
Wow, I say. Does Love know? 40 shakes his head.
It's a boatload of hell getting a movie made, especially one like B&P. You gotta believe your own bullshit, you know? It's like when you go to Promises and it's the last day and you've been there for 3 weeks and they're like, do you feel ready to go? And you say yes, because you were there, you fucking did it, you tried. What the hell are you gonna say? No? Give me an eight ball?
He laughs and watches a hooker dance to no music. When did you go to Promises, I ask. But 40 doesn't answer. He puts out his cigarette.
Earlier today, I had Ariana eat out Shelly while I fuck Shelly in the ass.
These are things I don't want to know. Hey, I say, what did you want to talk to me about? He hoovers more cocaine.
What did I want to what?
Why am I here?
The million-dollar question, he effuses. Why are we here? Why? Personally, I think Satan sent me here to fucking fuck shit up. The way God sent Love to love shit up.
40, I say. Maybe you want some weed? He points at the hookers. He tells me again about things he got them to do, and he might be lying about all of it. I decide I will not feel sorry for myself as 40 raves on about his sexual exploits. Everyone has something. Some people have a difficult child, and some people have a sick child, and some people have a limp, and some people have an impossible mother, and there is nobody on earth who has nothing. I have a mug of my DNA in a house in Rhode Island, and this is what Love has, a brother, a nightmare, a coked-up maniac who is now jumping on his bed like a 10-year-old, telling me about a birthday party he and Love had as kids. 40 jumps off the bed and falls into the credenza and bangs his head. He's too fucked up to feel it, and he's on his feet again.
So, are you psyched or are you psyched?
40, I say, I think you better sit down.
No, he says, I think you better sit down.
I am sitting.
Fuck yes, you better sit, he rails.
He claps.
And fuck you, Barry Stein.
He does more coke.
You know, he's just gonna look fucking stupid.
40, I say. I think maybe you've had enough. He wipes his nose. Megan fucking Ellison. I put down my champagne. What are you talking about?
Are you deaf?
He shouts.
Megan fucking Ellison. So fuck you, Barry Stein.
My heart beats. Megan Ellison. She made her and American Hustle. The hooker who was dancing is now sitting on Forty's lap, feeding him a taco. Forty, I say. Are you telling me that Megan Ellison is interested in the third twin?
No,
he says. I am telling you that Megan Ellison is interested in the third twin and the mess, both of them. Boom! 40 found out this morning. His agent had a meeting with Megan Ellison, and Megan Ellison can eat Barry Stein for breakfast. The agent says the offer will be coming any day now, and 40 and I clink glasses of champagne, and his hookers flop onto the bed and watch Wendy Williams and make out periodically, and this is not my kind of party, but at least 40 knows himself. He jumps in the middle of them, and they both roll toward him. Now listen here, old sport, he says. Just remember, it's only interest, and we don't want to jinx it. We agree to wait until the news is official before we tell anyone. But I don't know how Forty's going to do it. He's bouncing on the bed again, shouting.
Remember this moment, old sport. It's gonna happen, it is. And the second that it is out there, your life isn't yours anymore. This is out there, and you're the guy, the man. Everyone is gonna want a piece of you. Everyone is gonna love you. So, like, take this for you, man, you know? This is your success, and this is the magic hour, the golden time before the time. Just be in it. You earned it. Don't spread it, and don't pull on it, and don't push it, and don't share it, and don't examine it. This is it! If the big one hits right now, you die a writer. You die discovered. Live like that. Live right now.
It's true. Cokeheads can be annoying, but they also have this knack for knocking you the hell out of your head. 40 is right. This is my success, and I put up with Boots and Puppies, and I spent all those days at Intelligentsia and Taco Bell, and I did earn it. I jump onto the other bed, and I don't remember the last time I jumped on a bed. 40 howls and turns on the Boogie Nights soundtrack, and I jump and pounce and bounce, and the hookers laugh, and I did it. I captured the flag. I moved to Los Angeles. I found love. I fell in love. And now this, the hardest thing to do in the world, one of the hardest things, and I'm about to do it. I'm gonna make it in Hollywood. Love texts. Have you heard from 40? He disappeared. Sorry. Welcome to my world. She writes again a second later. I love you. I take a screen grab. I'll have this image stitched onto my pillows, dozens of pillows, written into the sky, engraved into the walls of our home. It's impossible for me to distinguish the love high from the Hollywood high, and there might even be a contact high from being in this cocaine den, but I don't need to separate one from the other. I am happy. I am here. All the fear inside of me, the Candace Benji Peach Beck Henderson Delilah of it all, has been sublimated by the joy of Love the Third Twin, the mess. I call Love. I assure her that 40 is safe because he's with me. Love is relieved. 40 and the hookers decide to go for a swim in the giant pool, and 40 shows off, doing the crawl and the butterfly and the breaststroke. He could be out there teaching kids to swim with his twin sister, but then some people prefer hookers over poor children. The whites of his eyes are red. I don't know if it's chlorine or cocaine.
You're a good friend, he says. You know, I think if I grew up without all this pressure and all this excess, I think I'd be more like you.
I start to tell him he's a good friend, but before I finish the sentence, he's submerged. It's the last day of Boots and Puppies, and I sit on this set a changed man. Love is a ball of feelings, overjoyed, sentimental, excited. Her movie is ending, and she doesn't know it yet, but mine will begin soon. We get to have a life like this, on sets, always creating, then rapping, then toasting.
I catch Forty's eye and wink, but he motions for me to stop. He's back. He's hungover. He's not sure if we have a deal. He hasn't heard from his agent all day. I tell him to relax. Let today be about boots and puppies.
You're a good man, he says. You see the big picture.
Always, I say. It's the only picture. I am good on a set, and I have come to love it here. Shooting the shit, working out in the desert. I'm the only crew member who will leave this location in better physical shape than I was when I arrived. I love my chair with my name on it, and I love our squeaky bed. I love the way a set makes you live in the moment. Now I am excited when Milo calls action, and I feel like I moved forward in life every time he calls cut. I will miss it here. I love the kitchen table where love first blew me. Now she sucks my dick every chance she gets. I love love. I love our movie family, even if I don't know all their names. People on a set all seem interchangeable, with dry hair and tan pants. But I love that, too. I love it when it's time for the martini shot, and you get to clap, and the day is over, and you did it. I love the time before that, too, the sweet building exuberance of the Abbey, named in honor of first AD Abby Singer. You learn things on a set, history, the almost of it all, two more to go. If we all die right now, we have a movie in the can. Love's parents saw some dailies, and they're so thrilled with Love's work that they're insisting on flying us all to their place in Cabo for a wrap party. Most movies like this wrap out at a dive bar with $2 beers, but because of Love, we're going to La Groseria for 2 nights. Love says I will love La Groseria, and she says Cabo is gentle heaven on earth. I laugh, and she smacks me. Watch it, wise ass. Love, I say, grabbing a water bottle from Kraft. Come on. When you hear Mexico, you think gentle? Milo laughs. Lovey, Mexico is pretty much the murder capital of the world. It's funny. Now that Milo accepts his fate that he's not going to be with Love, he's infinitely more bearable, likable even. I relate to him, with his fucked up parents and his creative impulses. Yeah, I say. Milo is right. I mean, they behead people in Mexico. Just then, a PA approaches.
Hey, Milo, he says. We have a visitor.
Love and I turn our heads, and indeed we do have a visitor. I drop my water bottle. The visitor is Officer Robin Fincher. Chapter 35. I am not jaywalking, and this is not Officer Robin Fincher's territory. He has no right to be here in uniform, standing on my set looking at my girlfriend. I pick up my water bottle and stay on the ground a moment too long and curse under my breath. Milo shakes his hand. Officer, he says, did you need to see our permits? Fincher laughs. I just need one or two lines and a close-up. Poor Milo can't tell whether or not the fucker is serious, but this is serious for me. What the fuck is he doing here? I wish, Milo says, but it's a two-person cast. Hopefully we'll be back up this way for a sequel, though, yeah? Fincher swallows. I was kidding, he says, and he narrows his small blue eyes at me. I popped by as part of a courtesy. We're just cruising through the area, addressing a theft situation, he says. A couple places nearby have been robbed, and we see you're rigged up pretty good here. We just wanted to make sure you locked down tight tonight. Milo shakes his hand. A horror movie within a movie, right? I touch Love's arm and tell her I have to go to the bathroom, but what I really have to do is figure out why the fuck Fincher is here. I sneak out of the house through a side door and run around to the front where I see Fincher's car. He has headshots in the front seat, but before I can explore further, I hear footsteps and turn around. Fincher lowers his sunglasses, and I wish I had a pair. Officer, I say, sweat beating the back of my neck. I'm a little confused. Did you get a California license yet? No, I say. I've been here. So you haven't been back to your apartment? He says. Because neither is your neighbor. Delilah. Fuck. Which neighbor? He takes off his sunglasses and wipes them down with a handkerchief. You know, your friend Delilah. She has a California state ID, lives in the same building as you. Well, not that you're official yet. She's missing? I play dumb. He nods. You know anything about that? I barely know her, I insist. He punches me in the stomach, and he is not allowed to do that, and I buckle. I am in the dirt. My gut is nothing but muscles, and I have no fat there, no padding to soften the blow. The fucker spits, and his loogie lands next to my face. Get the fuck up, he says. I went easy on you just now. I haven't been punched since Nanny Rachel, and I don't like the feeling, the way my muscles are all individual things again, with singular nerve endings. He kicks my knee. I said, get the fuck up! I stand, I will not give in, I will not reveal anything, and his steely little eyes can't possibly hold anything important. You're a fucker, he says. And it's a generic word, fucker. I don't know what you think, I say. But I didn't do anything. Except kill Delilah, he says, and we have a problem. I can't allow those words to come out of that mouth where someone might hear them. You did that. So you know, that matters to me, an officer of the law. I imagine it matters to your little fuck doll in there, and I am sure that it matters to Delilah's parents. Jim and Regina, by the way. You ever think about that, Goldberg? He steps closer. If he hits me again, I will kill him. I turn my head. Jim and Regina, he seethes. Jim and Regina. Mom and Dad. They love their baby. I turn my head and I meet his eyes head on. I barely know Delilah, I say. And I'm sure her parents will do everything they can to find her. You barely know her, he says, squinting at me. She's a neighbor, I say. He raises a fist and he comes at me and I cower and he backs off. He laughs. According to your neighbor, Dez, you actually knew Delilah pretty well. That drug dealer fucker. I will not be unnerved. If you mean that I slept with her, yes, I say, but I didn't know her very well. Phone records, Joe. He says, do you forget that I'm an officer of the law and that I have access to the missing persons database? Do you think her parents don't go out there and see to it that the LAPD talk to each and every individual who communicated with their daughter? The state of California cares about its residents. This isn't Bed-Stuy. We give a fuck here. We care. Bed-Stuy? I hate this kind of Californian. The type who doesn't know anything about the East Coast. The type who thinks Rhode Island is adjacent to Maine. I knew her a little bit, I say again, but I didn't even know she was missing. I was surprised to learn that you're an opiate man, he says, assessing me. You with the early morning jaywalking. You seem jacked up now. If I were to guess, I would have said coke, speed, maybe juice, but then no. You'd be a hell of a lot bigger if you were juicing. This is taking too long, and love is gonna wonder where I am. What do you want? He sighs. I want to know how to work the headphones you gave me, he says. Do you have the instructions? No, I say, and now I'm sweating. But it's not possible that the police linked me to Henderson through those headphones. Every asshole in Los Angeles has Beats headphones. That's too bad, he says. Do you know how to adjust them? See, my head's bigger than yours. You have a tiny head. I bet you hear that a lot. I don't know how to adjust them. I give him nothing. You don't know how to work your own headphones? He asks. Don't you think that's kind of funny, Bed-Stuy? I mean, they're pretty worn in. You've had them for a while. You don't know how to work them? I should get back in there, I say, edging away. He smiles. No, you shouldn't, he says. You're not on the IMDb page. You're not doing anything in there but hanging out. The only way I even knew you were on set is because your buddy Calvin showed me your girlfriend's Instagram page. Fucking social media, and he is jealous, and he drove all the way here from LA, working himself up. This is probably illegal, but it doesn't matter. The police protect their own. So, he says, I'm asking everyone in the lawns, particularly those who were close with Delilah. You haven't heard from her? No, I say. It's the truth. You haven't reached out to her? No, I say. It's the truth. When's the last time you bumped into her? And it is with great joy that I tell him more truth. The night of the Henderson Memorial, I was at the UCB, I say. I had a fight with my girlfriend. I left the UCB. I went to LaPoo. I saw Delilah at the bar. I sat down with her. She was waiting for her boyfriend to get there. She wouldn't tell me his name. She said he's famous. She made it sound like he lives in the neighborhood. He didn't show up. She was inebriated. I helped her get home. He is deflated, like a fat kid who just got told the Oreos are all gone. And I bet he was a fat kid. I bet he got picked on. But what they don't tell you about bullying is that sometimes the kid deserves it. He tries again. You helped her home. We live in the same building, I remind him. I love it when the facts are on my fucking side. He, however, does not. He walks up to me and gets in my face. I don't like your attitude, Bed-Stewie. And I don't like the fact that you failed to apply for legal residency in this great state. I will, I say. I promise. I don't think a promise from a piece of shit New Yorker means anything. Are we done here? No, he says, and he should have said yes. But you can go back inside. I turn and walk up the driveway toward the house. My stomach is pounding, and he had no right to hit me. He had no right to accuse me of anything either. He has no evidence. All he has is hate, and he will pay for that. I feel his eyes burning into the back of my head, stronger and more cancer-causing than the sun above. I'll have to get rid of him. There's no other option. You just can't have a fair shot at life if there's a cop out there who wants your ass behind bars. Chapter 36. Inside, nobody asks where I was. Everyone's too excited about the big Cabo announcement. Love's dad needs my social security number so that he can expedite a passport. The movie wrapped and I missed the last shot. A lot happens while you're being wrongfully interrogated. Champagne flows and music comes on, and I say that I'm going to take a nap. Love understands. You've been running so much. I'm worried you don't get enough rest lately. She hugs me and I flinch. Sorry. Went overboard with the sit-ups. I cover. You don't need sit-ups, she says. You're perfect. She kisses me and I go upstairs. Unfortunately, love should fucking worry about me. The movie is done, but my nightmare is just beginning. I close the bedroom door. I pace. I have to kill Fincher. But this is America. If you kill a cop, you die. That's how it is. I try to be calm. Be positive. We are going to Cabo, so there's that. Mexico's the kind of place where people just go around cutting heads off and shit. So I have that in my favor. Knowledge is power. I need the lay of the land. I Google La Grosseria. If I know Love's mother, she would have invited some sort of upscale website or magazine in to shoot her home, same way she did with the Isles. Sure enough, I find an article about La Grosseria, and already I feel more centered, more focused, the way the sniper finds his target in the crosshairs. I find the address of La Grosseria and take a fast course on the development where Love's family makes another home, the famous residents who live nearby, and the houses up for sale. And boom. Axl Rose lives in the development. Axl Rose is the type who would have a secure home. He has nutjob fans, and he's been around. His home has been on the market for years, and his schedule is good news, too. He hasn't been to Mexico in a while, as in not going anytime soon. As in, the house belongs to real estate agents. It gets better. Axel's home is a perpetual project. Unfinished renovations, a pool that's not done, landscaping indecision.
a cobbled cornucopia of yellowing lawns and half-formed cupolas. Real estate websites supply me with pictures of this house that showcase an ongoing conflict about whether to tear it down or continue with the nouveau riche terracotta thing.